Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Property Hard Truth by Niza Nizam.
This podcast is brought to you by Niza Ali and Nizam Adli, also known as Niza Nizam, property consultants from PropNext Realty. With more than 14 years experience, not only transacted more than hundreds of HDB resales, also executive condominiums, resale or new launches from developers, landed and luxury condominiums. Well-versed in any property-related laws and financials, including Islamic Faraid and Sharia laws. Before doing anything to your property in Singapore, call us first at 967-04504 or 9787-6959. You can find us at all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube or Google. Niza Nizam SG or nizanizam.com.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Property Hard Truth by Niza Nizam. How are you, Niza?
Great.
Great. All right. Today, I think we're going to do a bit of a different format when it comes to our Property Hard Truth. We're not going to just talk about Property Hard Truth, but we will always start with to be reclaimed off East Coast could add 800 hectares of land.
Wow.
Right? Wow. So the tracts of land could be reclaimed off East Coast Park in the coming decades, creating about 800 hectares of land for new homes and other amenities, as well as a new reservoir. Wow.
Is it going to be like a connected reclaimed land?
No, I think,
land,
wait, or? Before that, it's more for, because of the fact that it's the receding hairline, like receding, what do you call that?
Beach line. Right?
The level of the sea will rise in the next decades or then all that.
Definitely.
So they try to mitigate the rise of the sea level by reclaiming around East Coast, where they do parks, housing and all
but
that, and become a reservoir.
Reclaiming on top of the current beach line or opposite. That means that it will be like
there's a
water
reservoir. So interesting concept. I think it's yet to be seen. It's part of the bigger master plan, I believe. And then
when they see Long Island, I think they
it's very
trying
long,
to
actually.
I think they're trying to.
If you notice, it's like a, if I'm not wrong, it's quite a distance from Tanah Merah Terminal all the way to Marina Barrage.
Wow,
so that's how far. Yeah, that's what they call a Long Island. It's gonna be a new concept probably in decades. Hopefully, I don't know whether in our lifetime.
Is it something
I don't
similar
know
to the Long Island in US? Long Island.
Probably, I don't know. But yeah, like, this is one of the major announcement by the government, by Minister of Development, about the fact that they're gonna reclaim first to mitigate the rising sea level. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Singapore being Singapore, they will not just do it. They will put amenities, housing, parks,
yeah, definitely
whatever.
They have to make it interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So, what else is trending? Or rather, what else is...
Well, I'm very attracted to the new news that just came up about 10 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Today is 29 November.
Yep.
And the Straits Times says that our Minister Desmond Lee has mentioned that there will be service apartments for longer term stay in the works for renters.
Mm.
And we're talking about Singapore, which generally most Singaporeans are not a renter.
It's short-term rental, probably, yeah.
Yeah, but here they're talking about longer stay.
Short-term renter, but longer stay.
Longer-term stay.
Right.
As you know, in HDB, you cannot rent
short-term,
too short, the most 6 months. I'm sorry, 6 months minimum or above. And if let's say condo, it has to be 3 months and above.
But of course, at the prerogative of the landlord.
Landlord, but here they're talking about longer term stay. So I mean, like, I think longer term here is actually meant for meant for those who are waiting. Transitioning, waiting for their new homes, waiting for keys for their new homes or for their renovations to be completed. As you know now, most contractors are having a hard time
manpower
or time to complete the renovations.
Yeah.
So
if you, let me put it into context. If you know HDB, if you're selling a HDB flat, if the buyer agrees, you have an extension of stay, which is maximum 3 months. So, you know, sometimes there's too many, because you need to buy and sell. So the 3 months become 0 months because you need to vacate and move to the next unit, to the unit that you have bought. But you have not renovated, you have not done anything to the to the unit that you wanna buy or that you have bought, then you can't just move in. And you can't go to stay in a hotel for 3 months. It's going to cost you a bomb.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the HDB, you can't do short-term rental. And no landlord will want to rent you at 3 months, you know, for your sake, lah, because it's not feasible in terms of passive income, in my opinion.
But I'm not sure what. How are they going to pilot this, okay? Because they say it will coexist alongside the shorter stay service apartments with existing 7-day minimum stay requirements, and similarly cannot be strata subdivided for sale.
I think we leave the technical part aside.
Yeah, but I think this one, quite interestingly, because before this, there was an article about Switzerland, about how most of the buyers now actually outprice.
Okay.
If they want to buy a house, it's like totally almost impossible, the price. So most of the young buyers are going out there to be permanent renters. Yeah, so I think.
But my opinion is Singapore is not going to go that path. I think maybe.
Because they mentioned that the home ownership in Switzerland have reduced.
Yeah.
Like used to be like many people own a home. And then they reduce.
But the way I see Singapore is increased. Yeah.
More home ownership.
More home ownership. Mm-hmm. But this is, I think, a good concept plan whereby it allows for, it gives it less stress. It doesn't it's become less stressful for homeowners in terms of transition.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about HIP alone. If those who know HIP, minimally 10 days you need to not be in the house so that your toilets, whatever, can be done and all that.
I think government take the cue from,
it's a proactive thing,
the country clubs that nearby, the outskirts, like in Yishun Country Club, Orchid Country Club.
Offers HIP stay.
Yeah, and even Downtown East, that side, what you call it. They are offering like 2 weeks stay for those HIP.
For those who are renovating the house.
Yeah. But 2 weeks, not enough lah. HIP, okay lah.
Yeah.
But I think longer term in this case, maybe for those that is undergoing renovation.
I read somewhere it says minimum of 3 months. But it's a good initiative. I think it gives the market option and it doesn't create a illegal subletting kind of thing the way I see.
Actually, when they talk about service apartment here, I think not the typical service apartment whereby your apartment is being
full service,
like they will have cleaners and all that.
Yeah.
But I think this one maybe like keep it to a minimum, like hassle-free, like fast-free kind
but
of thing.
Like I said, this is news out of the oven, so we will update.
Yeah, but I like this idea because if you look at the two locations that they're talking about is Upper Thomson Road, which is just next to Springleaf MRT. And the other one, over there we have two parcels, parcel A, parcel B.
Okay.
And then another parcel at Zion Road. You know the Zion Road where they used to tear down the old HDB? So I think that's really...
One more sharing about the recent news is I think today is 29. I'm just reading it. It's updated 52 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
HDB rents down 0.4% in October. Mm-hmm. First drop in over 2 years.
Again,
HDB rent down 0.4% in October.
Mm-hmm.
First drop in over 2 years.
Okay.
Condo rent dip 0.2%.
Okay, so what is down? Down what? Price?
Yeah.
Transactions or what?
The rent price.
The rent price. Okay.
So, I just read the first paragraph. Rents for Housing Board flats fell by 0.4% in October, dipping for the first time in more than 2 years, with analysts citing growth in new flat supply as the main reason. So, probably, we've seen for ourselves, a lot of people are collecting their BTO keys every other day. Even in HDB, you see it's always full. People are collecting keys and all that. So I think this is where the rental market is softening.
Also, the old supply of condos, now they are ready. The one that is building under construction, now
TOP.
More units TOP.
Yes,
and
this year, a lot of units TOP, my friend.
Yeah, and those projects at TOP are large developments. Large development like Affinity, like Riverfront, and then Avenue South. So these are large number of condo units that has TOP. Therefore, all the buyers that used to rent now move on to their new homes.
One comment is that landlords are now lowering their rates amid intensifying competition for a tighter pool of tenants, which means it's all about demand and supply. there's a lot more less demand, but a lot more supply. So those who are willing to lower down their rent will get the tenant, I believe. So then again, this is a simple fundamental about property, whether it's rent or sale and purchase. I think it's about the demand and supply.
Yeah, I think this is where the phase of transitioning lah, where that we see a lot of movements in the rental market as well in the sale
of course,
market.
Of course, the COVID has disrupted a lot of things. So now it's slowly but surely going back to the norm. So we are seeing even prices of HDB or property are tapering or mediating, moderating, rather mediating pula, moderating, and similarly for rent. Now, let's move to a topic that we want to talk today. COV, cash over valuation.
Okay.
Right. So, this is like a taboo word. With taboo? A lot of,
taboo. Sugar cane.
Oh, taboo word. Taboo word with a lot of HDB owners or buyers and sellers, especially because of the fact that it's cash. Yeah, you cannot use your CPF if the valuation is lower than the closing price. So before that, let's define the term COV, cash over valuation. Example, your HDB flat is valued at 500,000 by the third party independent valuer, but you sold your flat at 550. So that 50,000 excess is actually cash over valuation, whereby your buyer must die use cash to pay, not using the loan, not using the CPF.
It has to be a lump sum payment on top of their down payment.
Yes.
So if let's say their down payment in cash, let's say they take a bank loan, right? It's 5% of the valuation has to be cash.
Yeah.
But you have a COV of 50K. So your 5% cash plus the 50K COV, total cash amount that you have to down pay upfront when
So, 2 years ago, when COVID was recovering and people really wanted houses and all that, a lot of people are willing to pay hundreds, thousand or even more cash over valuation for a unit that is probably a big unit. They are willing to pay, and the competition was so strong that government had to intervene, and there was some introduction of cooling measures and all that. Especially coming from the downgraders of private property. So, and it gives the market a bit of imbalance because bigger units like EA, EM, Jumbo are going at 800, 900, even $1 million, while the valuation probably has not caught up with the transacted price.
Because the valuation for the next quarter, right? I mean, the change of valuation, it will take place after they see the numbers, the numbers, the movement in the past quarter. Then valuation can upkeep.
And
there's
the property price index also. But I think to make it simple, I think today's market, are you as a seller, as a buyer, willing to pay COV, or do we as property agent advocate you to pay COV for a particular unit? So what are the pros and cons, and why sometimes we feel, based on our professional judgment, that this is worth paying in terms of COV? Of course, not hundreds and hundreds of thousands. Probably in the range of 30,000 to 50,000. Especially, why is it worth paying that COV vis-a-vis buying something that is without COV?
Yeah, so actually, this COV, right, does not just apply to public housing. Although we know that HDB controls the valuation price per se, because only panels or valuers from the HDB panel will be allowed to do the valuation for the property of the public housing.
Correct.
But even so, we also see in the private market where banks are not willing to give a higher valuation. So sometimes the asking price are even way above the valuation that the bank will match. So in the private market also, private property market private residential, correct, also see a problem. We do get buyers who are not willing to pay if the bank is not able to match the valuation.
The closing price.
The closing price, yeah.
So COV doesn't only happen in public housing, which is more apparent, but COV does happen in private housing because of the fact that the bank are not willing to match the asking price or the closing price.
And usually every bank have many different panel of valuers. So even if, let's say, when we say cannot match, right, that means we check with all the different panels of valuers lah,
yeah,
in different banks lah. So usually that's the case. But if there is a bank that can match, then of course, the buyer, if the buyer willing to take on that particular bank, yeah, then it's good for him.
And of course, the profile of the buyer, I think that
that's
matters.
Also another thing.
And end of the day, how the bank wants to mitigate their risk lah. So a lot of factors involved. Let's come back to HDB. When, Niza, that you would tell the buyer worth paying the COV. Example, this unit is bought at 750. Right? Valuation came back at 700. That 50,000. Why is it worth paying that 50,000?
Well, it depends on the size of the flat.
Okay.
If it's a small flat, small flat like what? Let's say if it's a 4-room flat that is very small. Okay, because 4-room got different types and different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So if let's say it's a 80 square meter kind of 4-room and then you're paying 50K more, if that price is actually a price of a bigger flat, for example, you can buy a 5-room flat at 750 in that location, then why would you want to pay 750 or 50K COV for a 4-room that is only 80 square meters, for example? Mm-hmm. So we always compare with the next tier type of unit in that location.
Correct. But the question is, why would you tell some buyer that this is worth paying the COV?
Okay, it's worth paying, for example, it has the best view. And like I said, if it's a standalone unit, then the best... there's a lot of factors that make that 50K worth, right? Don't tell me one factor and then is the view only. Then maybe there's some people who are willing to pay for that. And you know, for those unit that is $1 million one, right, usually it's a high ceiling, the loft one. So it's the only unit in that block or the only block that has that, then maybe it's fair to pay SUV.
If it was me, right, and why I would tell the buyer is worth paying, we look at the renovation.
The renovation is
a tip-top renovation where, a quality material and all that, because... Guys, you think about it. You buy without COV, example, 700,000. But then the hassle of getting the contractor.
The time. The hassle.
The delay.
Dealing with the
upselling and all that.
The stress to select your tiles.
And cost you more than 50,000. I mean, I've seen for ourselves, our client.
Yeah.
They told us, we only budget certain amount, let's say 40,000. End up 80,000. That's ridiculous. So, and the stress of, even with the extension of stay, they can't even finish the job.
Yes.
So I think that is how we try to mitigate that balance in terms of shouldn't you pay the COV.
Well, to us, time is money lah, and I'm sure in our clients also, time is money.
Yep.
So if it takes a lot of time, sometimes they're willing to go through the hassle, but the time they cannot, because time is like they have other plans.
True.
They want to do this. They want to meet the children's schooling, period and all that. So always when it comes to the time, right, they will like, okay, we cannot deal with this. So
I think more importantly is the physical aspect of the unit lah. I think
and of course the terms and condition if the seller do not need extension or stay, so that means they can get the unit as fast as they can.
No, but I still feel it's not compelling reason to pay a high COV, for example, 50,000. Maybe 10-20 probably, but 50,000 just because you have the convenience of time, I think must rethink lah. This is
so
how I feel.
So you're saying that people were willing to pay the COV because they see the added value in the
unit itself,
physically in the house,
and also on top of that, time saving. So I think that's more important to me. If I were your agent and you tell me, Nizam, should I pay 50,000 COV for this unit because the valuation is such, we look at it from all aspects. Physically and time saving, and also convenience or inconvenience for that matter. So these are things that we do to make sure that, you are assured and you feel, it gives you the option of making the informed decision. So, very, very, very subjective, of course. I think I don't want to put myself in a spot where, Nizam say COV is fine. No, there's a lot of aspect to it.
It's very difficult because it depends on the buyer as well.
In general, today, I think nobody wants to pay more than or put it this, nobody wants to pay COB lah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants valuation to match and all that.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, sometimes people don't understand, especially sellers.
Mm.
They feel that with COV, they get more money. Actually, no. Basically, it's the valuation is such that, you know, it's not additional. COV is not additional. It's basically the price, the closing price. Lah. It's just that whether your buyer is willing to pay that additional cash over valuation.
Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, I foresee, because with conversation on the ground with fellow agents, especially new cluster of BTO, MOP, and good location, good cluster, they are saying that yes, expectation of sellers are high, but valuation of HDB is moderated. So a lot of at this cluster, I'm not going to mention, many buyers put up the $1,000 option fee, but when valuation comes and it's more than 50,000-60,000, they opt out. They don't exercise. And according to my sources on the ground, they say many units there, a lot of buyers but never exercise, which mean a lot of unit comes back to the market lah. So, but if you are the seller and you understand and you know that your buyer do not want to pay the COV, it is also the similar sentiment for the rest of the buyers. So you need to understand your pricing strategy and all that lah, so that you don't lose out in the opportunity for your purchase. This is how we always you know, analyze and strategize for our clients. Anything to add?
Nothing.
So I think
I guess well, COV cash, if they have cash, right, they will not pay COV because they will use that cash to renovate to their own taste. And then sometimes the most buyers would like to go to that journey of choosing or having
their
to
own tile,
design their own taste to the to
correct
the place.
You're right.
Yeah.
So then you manage expectation in terms of making sure that you buy a unit that is normal.
Yeah, that's why for us, we prefer a bare unit.
Yeah, something
unit,
that, you know,
simple, you just see a blank
minimal
canvas.
Renovation, yeah. Where, you know, the sellers are very motivated, they price it right, then you buy it, you know, no COV, and you can do it to what your heart desire. Wow. Right. So, my friend, thank you for watching and listening to our podcast, and we hope to, you know, empower, educate, share a lot of things with regards to property, be it news, be it our own experiences, and so that without sugarcoat things. So, my name is Nizam Adli.
I'm Nizali.
See you in our next podcast. Bye.